You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. It's the 5th of December, 2021, and I'm having a bit of a giveaway tonight. There's two t-shirts going. Going to have a bit of a competition. So if you have a pen and paper ready, I'll be reading out the phone number later on in a few minutes. So grab yourself a pen and paper and write down the phone number. I'll give you the Irish national number and I'll give you the international number. And I'll be asking two questions, and then we'll see what happens. Now, I did test the phone, and the phone actually does work, okay? I did test it, so it does work. But if all else fails and the phone doesn't work, we'll sort something out. But I did test it, and it does work. All right, so tonight I have two guests on, but they're pre-records. Pre-records that I did a couple of weeks ago because the guests couldn't make the actual time on Sunday. So we did the pre-records. So the first guest I'm going to have on is a chap called Anthony Peake. And then the second guest, we'll take a little, there'll be a musical break, a little jingle, and then I'll come back in and introduce Lucia Dashkovic. And I'll be giving you details about both of their bios in a few minutes. But before we do that, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Okay, folks, you know the communication channels are, you can get us on our website, which is circleofwhitelight.com, and we're on patreon.com/COWLR, and also if you want to help and support the show and make a donation towards the paid forward appeal, the PayPal button is on the website. You can just click on that. Thanks to everybody who donates. It's really much appreciated. Right, okay, now just a couple of things. I will read out the number in a few minutes, so grab a paper and pen just in case, and I'll read out the number. But just a few things first. I'd just like to say well done to yesterday's organisers of the school strike rally at Merrion Square South in Dublin, and to the many speakers against children being forced to wear questionable masks. Rough estimate of attendance was about around 5,000 people. So well done to everybody that turned up to let the government know that you're not happy about what's going on. It's really upsetting a lot of people about what's going on. I mean, as a dad, lucky enough, my son is 20 and he's in college and he used to wear a mask. But obviously he knows what, you know, what to try and pull it down when he can and all that kind of stuff. I just pity young parents, young kids, when the kids don't really understand, you know, it's very hard. And it's just, they're psychopaths and parasites that are doing this. We all know that. You know, it's the New World Order. We know what it's all about. Okay, so the just a couple of things on the list to actually read out. So Ghislaine Maxwell's trial starts. And for some reason, all these people all of a sudden are stepping down from their roles, CEOs and CFOs and everything else. Now, Reuters have come out and defended this and said that this is untrue and that it is just a coincidence that these people are stepping down and is not linked to the trial. Now, Reuters, the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Pull the other one that has bells on it. But, you know, let's see what develops anyway. But there's a list gone around the internet and we'll see who is resigning and stepping down. I mean, maybe it is just coincidence. Who knows? We'll find out soon enough. But the whole Ghislaine Maxwell trial seems to be kept in the background. We're not hearing much about it by the sound of things. So, but there is a file gone around. I don't know whether you've seen it. I was sent a PDF there the other day of all the people who was on the flight log that visited the island. And it's an interesting set of names on that list. So it is going around. So you'll get a copy, I'm sure. People will send it to you. Okay, just another thing on the list here. The medical journal Circulation is a well-respected publication. It's 71 years old, its articles are peer-reviewed, and in one survey, it was rated the world's number one journal in the cardiac and cardiovascular system category. I'm going to quote the final sentence of the abstract, which appears at the beginning of the article. This is all I, you, or anyone else needs to know. It says, we conclude that the mRNA vax dramatically increase inflammation on the endothelium and T-cell infiltration of cardiac muscle and may account for the observations of increased thrombosis, cardiomyopathy and other vascular events following vaccination. So they're admitting that the vaccine is actually causing damage. And that's come out, and that's a peer-reviewed paper. But then again, you know, everybody who listens to the show knows this already. You know it already. So we needn't say any more than that. Myocarditis seems to be the big thing at the moment, with a lot of sports, football stars and sports stars dropping. A lot of people, even doctors, are coming out and saying, yes, it does cause it. There is a heart issues after you get the vaccine and causing that. Okay, so the giveaway I'm going to be doing is two T-shirts tonight. It's Christmas after all. So it's going to be two T-shirts. Okay, so the plan of attack, and this, by the way, if you're listening to this after the live show, the competition's over. Okay, this is really for the live show only, just in case people hear the podcast tomorrow and they're ringing up saying, I want to, you know, I know the answer to the question. Okay, so if you have a pen and paper ready, the phone number on a national level is 046 927 1212. That's 046 927 1212. And if you're ringing internationally, the number is 00 353 46 927 1212. That's 00 353 46 927 1212. So what I'm going to do is, after I read out Anthony's bio, I'm going to give out the question, start off the pre-record, and then whoever rings in first, that'll be the first person who wins the first T-shirt. Okay, so hopefully you've all got that. Okay, so I'll just say it again before we start off the pre-record. So just my week, a little thing for my week. Thanks to Liam from the PIF group, who built and sent me a Bob Beck blood electrifier device during the week. Thanks, Liam, for that. I wanted to understand the technology again, so I went and visited Bob Beck's lectures on YouTube. I had forgotten what he said about vitamin A and garlic being bad for you. He said garlic kills brain cells, and if it gets into your blood, it could kill you. Now, I'm not saying this. This is what Bob Beck said on his video. So if you want to listen to him talking about garlic and how dangerous it is, go over to YouTube and type in Bob Beck. He does two talks. One was in 1996 and one was in 1997, and he talks about garlic. So again, something to have a look at. You know, very interesting. Okay, so I have two pre-records tonight. The first pre-record is Anthony Peake, and the second one is Lucia Dashkovic. Okay, so this is Anthony's bio, and after this, I'll just give you the number again. I'll give you the question. I'll start the podcast, and whoever rings in first will be the first person to win a T-shirt. Okay, so Anthony Peake was a curious child. While his friends were reading Batman and Superman comics, Anthony was immersing himself in learning of the most arcane nature while still keeping an eye on the X-Men and Doctor Strange. It was in 1966, at the age of 12, that he, quite by accident, came across a copy of The Sky People by Brinsley Lepore Trench, and from then on there was no stopping him. The British part series Man, Myth and Magic was read with intense interest, followed by the discovery of John Keel's Project Trojan Horse and Jacques Vallée's Passport to Magonia. What followed was a ferocious, unquestionable need to know everything about everything. At university, he chose courses that would accommodate his wide interests, specialising in the sociology of religion, the theory of language development, and the art of the Italian Renaissance. A postgraduate course in management led Anthony away from his calling as a writer and into a career as a manager in various UK businesses. His interest in the esoteric continued with a growing fascination for quantum physics and neurology developing over the years. It was in the year 2000 that his life was to change. A fortuitous set of circumstances allowed him to take a year sabbatical from his business career, and he decided that he would focus the fruits of all his reading and research in writing a book. Exactly 1 year later, he surfaced with the manuscript of his first book, then entitled Cheating the Ferryman. This book was a distillation of all his areas of interest: quantum physics, neurology, ancient myths, altered states of consciousness, and the mystery of death. However, it was to take 5 years before this work appeared in print. Thanks to the help of Professor Bruce Grayson of the University of Virginia, an article based upon Anthony's Cheating the Ferryman hypothesis was to appear in the winter 2004 edition of the Journal of Near-Death Studies, the academic periodical of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, IANDS. A few months later, in early 2005, British publishing house Arcturus bought the rights to the book, and a year later, and after a substantial rewrite, Anthony's first book, with the new title, Is There a Life After Death? The Extraordinary Science of What Happens When We Die, was published. The rest, as they say, is history. This book has now sold over 60,000 copies worldwide and has been translated into various foreign languages, editions including Spanish, Russian and Polish. Indeed, Anthony has now had books published in every major European language. Anthony has now written 8 books, co-authored a 9th and co-edited a 10th. All of them developed his Cheating the Ferryman hypothesis into ever wider areas of application. His approach has always been to apply science to the mysterious and the enigmatic. His 10th book, A Work on the Time Plays and Time Theories of British Author Playwright J.B. Priestley, was published in 2018. In 2019, a sequel of his book, Opening the Doors of Perception, will be published. Also in 2018, an audiobook of Anthony's first work, Is There Life After Death? The Extraordinary Science of What Happens When We Die, was released, with Anthony reading his own writings. There you go. Fantastic. We had a great interview, so I'm going to play it now. Okay, so the number is 046-927-1212, nationally 00353-46927-1212 for international. And the question is, what radio show did I co-host before I ran Circle of White Light Radio? And this is Anthony. Enjoy. I'd like to introduce Anthony Peake. Anthony was on the show about a year and a half ago, and we had great information. We were talking about the fact that we could be in this quantum program and everything that's involved and around that. Good evening, Anthony. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Alan. Absolutely. Yes. Great. Sun is shining here in West Sussex. All's good with the world.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks a lot for coming on. I was fascinated with the last interview that we did regarding talking about this quantum program, because more and more people are talking about the Matrix and whether we're in this advanced program. I think I mentioned the computer program in the 90s called SimCity, where people could actually build their own city from this program and they had to maintain and run things. And it's something that I want to get into, because I think more and more evidence comes out regarding energy, the flow of energy and the manipulation of energy on the planet. One of the things that I'm being involved with is a device called the Spooky Device, which uses a thing called quantum entanglement, which Einstein found out when he was alive. And he called it Spooky. And then John White, who developed the Spooky Machine, actually using Rife technology. So you get the atom and you split it. And if I have somebody's fingernail, it doesn't matter where they are on the planet, I can actually treat them, because that fingernail is part of their DNA. And it's, you know, I can send out healing to them. And that's incredible. But I actually have used this technology, and the people I've actually done the treatment for have said they found that it had helped them, which is phenomenal. So, you know, that's something we can get into. But let's talk about the quantum program that we think we're in, or what people are talking about. The one thing that I'm interested in is, because if this is an advanced computer program, And having an IT background, I've been involved in programming at various stages in my life. And I'm aware of subroutines where basically you have a task that needs to be repeated on a regular basis. So the program gets sent off to do a subroutine, to do that task, and then come back to the main program. And my understanding of what I'm feeling based on this quantum program we're in, if we are in it, is that people say that we have free will. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we don't have, maybe we have a perception of free will, because as we are sitting here doing this interview at the moment, I have free will, but I have limited free will because I'm in this room at the moment. So there's only a certain amount of things that I can do, right, while I have this free will. And if I go down to some other place, say if I drive down to Dublin and I go down to Dublin, then I'll have more options of that free will, but it's limited. It's not unlimited. It's limited depending on what I can do and the facilities I have available and the resources I have available to me. So if we're in this advanced computer program where we think we have free will, but these free will choices are all predicted and pre-programmed, then that means our life is pre-programmed in what we do. Now, that's just my theory and my kind of logic to it. I'm not saying that's true, obviously, but it's just my approach to it. But let's get into your thoughts on the quantum program and the experiments that you've come across regarding energy and how energy can be changed, manipulated, possibly manifested.
Okay, well, the first thing I'd like to say is that, in my opinion, there's an awful lot of rubbish being talked about quantum entanglement. And quantum entanglement, yes, it's a fact, and we know it exists. But this whole idea of quantum healing and, that doesn't work with the science, but it doesn't work with me. The issue here that quantum physics is extraordinary enough as it is, without getting it into woo-woo, and everything else as well. Let's start with the science. Let's start with exactly what we know about the science, because we know that out there are skeptics who will blow you out of the water if you start making glib statements about what is taking place in terms of quantum entanglement. Okay. Quantum entanglement, as you quite rightly said, was Albert Einstein, 1937, with two friends, associates of him, Podolsky and Rosen, got together and put together a thought experiment called the EPR experiment, the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky experiment. But they were doing it to disprove spooky action at a distance. They weren't doing it to prove it. They were doing it to diss it. They were doing it to show that it was nonsense. So that's an important point. Okay? However, in the thought experiment, it was so elaborately done that it led questions, and in 1964, an Irish physicist called John Bell, Northern Irish physicist based at CERN, wrote a paper where he analysed the implications of this non-locality, and he discovered that Einstein was wrong, and that it wasn't nonsense, and there was a possibility that if you entangle two subatomic particles, you put them in the same quantum state, then you place them at any distance, if you do one thing to one subatomic particle, the other reacts instantaneously. Yep. Now, effectively, this contravenes all our known physics. For instance, it contravenes our physics and the idea that the maximum speed that information can be spread is the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. If it's instantaneous, or damn near instantaneous, it means that that is not the limit of speed, because something must travel between the two of them, okay? Now, in 1981, there were three researchers in Paris, a guy called Alain Aspect, a Dalibard, and Roger. And the three of them did an experiment, in a physical experiment, not a mathematical thought experiment, but a physical experiment at the Institute of Optics in Paris. And they proved that these two subatomic particles communicate instantaneously. So spooky action at a distance is a real thing. Okay. But it only happens with subatomic particles, sort of, which we'll come into a second. Subsequent to this, there's a guy called Anton Zeilinger at the University of Vienna. And he's been working with entangled particles. He's been doing work to such an extent, they've been bouncing these particles off satellites. And the effect still takes place. You do one thing to one particle, the other one reacts instantaneously. Now, this suggests something quite interesting about the true nature of reality here. A guy called David Bohm, who was an American physicist who fell foul of the McCarthy regime, the anti-communist regimes in the 1950s, ended up at Birkbeck College in London. He argued that we're getting it wrong here. We see two particles, but at a deeper level of reality, and I'm talking a really deeper level of reality, I'm talking about, again, if there are any scientists out there, if I'd throw in the Planck length, you'll understand the Planck length is the smallest distance that is possible scientifically. But there are numbers of distance between what we know is in the universe and this smaller size. So there's a huge area of size that we don't know what is going on. Bohm argued at that lower level of reality, what we see as two particles are in fact one single particle. Okay? And that's why they communicate instantaneously, because they're the same particle.
Yeah.
Okay? Now this gets weirder, because there's a guy called Richard Feynman, one of the top American particle physicists of the late 20th century. He was the guy that did the calculations on the O-rings when the Challenger disaster took place. Really great guy. He once came up with the conclusion that everything we perceive is one electron traveling at infinite speed, traveling backwards and forwards in time. And this creates everything that we perceive. It's all a unity. It's what the Buddhists talk about. It's the idea of we are one, everything is one, okay? So when the wackos, the New Age wackos, talk about everything is one, you know, they're talking out their backside. They're not doing the science. The science supports them, because it does, but not to the extent they take it. Now, let's move on to here, because there's then some very strange things taking place in modern quantum physics. For instance, and again, anybody who reads my books, everything I'm saying now, I reference back to academic papers. I don't make these statements out of the blue. I'll say, right, this is the paper. Go back to the paper and read it. You know, a guy called Marcello Trui many years said, extraordinary claims need extraordinary proofs. I give the proofs. I make the claims and I give the proofs. I don't just say I'm channeling it from the planet Tharg or some ascended masters from Tibet told me. It's not what I do. I do the science, okay? So what is very interesting about subatomic particles and this whole duality thing is that there's something else that subatomic particles do, which is very, very strange. There seems to be a direct relationship between the act of observation of a conscious mind and a measuring device and the creation of subatomic particles. If a subatomic particle is not measured or observed, it's a wave of probability. A guy called Max Born came up with this in the 1930s, okay? The idea is that it does not exist. If it's not been observed, it does not exist. It was the line, again, you might know Einstein's famous line, but he turned around and he said, I don't believe that the moon doesn't exist if I don't look at it. Breaking news, Einstein, it doesn't exist if you're not looking at it. And quantum physics tells us this. Quantum physics have known this for 40, 50 years. It's just the man in the street.
Okay, let me get my head around this. So you're saying that all these things don't exist unless we're looking at it. So at the moment, whatever outside the room that I'm in currently doesn't exist unless I'm there.
It does not exist for you. It only exists in the people who are rendering and creating that by collapsing the wave function of that reality. If I just want to explain a little bit about how this wave function works, by the way.
Okay.
Like we have a crime wave. A crime wave is a statistical analysis where you have a curve, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what quantum physics is. It's mathematical. Okay? It works on maths. So you have this statistical wave of the probability of finding a subatomic particle somewhere in a box, for example. Before the box, so we know there's a subatomic particle going to be in a box somewhere.
Okay.
Until the box is opened and the box inside the box is viewed or measured, the subatomic particle statistically can be anywhere in the box. when it's observed, that statistical wave collapses into a point particle that's found in a particular position. Once the particle wave is collapsed, the position stays there. The particle exists forever. Okay?
Okay.
So, all well and good. Subatomic particles are really tiny. In the initial experiments they did them with photons, which are point particles of light. A photon of light has no extension in space. It is literally a point particle. It also travels, by the way, at the speed of light, which from the point of view of a particle, a photon, actually means that it's eternal. There is no time for a photon, even though photons are the things that help you see the world around you. I haven't got time to go into that at the moment, okay? But even that is so weird. It's not true. Okay, so they discovered that photons did this, but photons are what are called bosons. They are subatomic particles that carry a message. That's what a boson is, like you have the Higgs boson. The Higgs boson is the thing that carries information. Electrons are different. Electrons are little bits of matter. But they found that electrons did this as well. So suddenly they discovered that this kind of weird being a wave and then being a particle consisted of things that make up matter. Because the atoms are made up of electrons, neutrons, protons. They then discovered, they then said, okay, well, if this weirdness happens with photons and electrons, can it happen with atoms? They started doing experiments and they found, yes, the same thing happens with atoms. If atoms are not observed, they are a wave. Now, atoms are the things that make up the physical reality around us.
Yeah.
Well, technically they don't. They come together and make molecules, and it's molecules that make the physical reality, except if you're an element, in which case it's just an atom.
So does that mean that we have the ability to manipulate them atoms or molecules because we have, you know, people we talk about manifesting or healing ourselves and have ways to manipulate them?
That's a leap too far. Let me just finish and I'll come back to that. They then found that molecules do the same thing, large molecules. There's something called a buckyball, Buckminster fullerene. Buckminster fullerene has 60 separate atoms in it. It is wave-particle duality, which means that people bring it into existence. Now, since then, they've been doing even more experiments. And back in, I think it was 2018, again, researchers working in Vienna managed to cause this wave-particle duality with a huge, huge molecule. Now, this molecule in size, in my new book I describe this, is around about 40% the size of viruses. Now, they still have not got the upper limit of this thing where observation brings them into existence. But for you are already at 40% of the size of viruses, there's no reason to believe or not believe that viruses can be brought into existence by the act of observation or the act of anticipation. Now suddenly we're in a really weird world because now what are we talking about? COVID? COVID is a virus. Viruses are very small. Could viruses be created by the anticipation of people? Could we create these things by expecting them to be out there? Now, I have a theory I call the egregorial theory of science. I believe that subatomic particles, when they're discovered, are brought into existence by the anticipation of the scientists. And I have example after example of this in my new book. For example, they were looking for the Higgs boson. They find it. Many years ago, they were looking for something called the muon. And it was completely theoretical. They didn't know whether it really existed or it didn't. And one day, quite by accident, they discovered it. And the guy who was responsible for the discovery was a guy called E.E. Raby. He was a Nobel Prize winner. And his actual words he used when it was discovered was, "Who ordered that?" So the scientists are starting to realize that there is a direct relationship between consciousness and what is out there. Okay.
Well, it goes back to manifesting, doesn't it? It goes, you know, your thought process, what you think, I know you said, you know, the law of attraction is not something that you're interested in, but
not at all.
If we have the ability to manipulate atoms and energy,
No, no, we don't. We don't. No, we don't have the ability to manipulate them. We don't know how to manipulate them. It's one thing, the subatomic particles showing the ways of doing things, but I know of nobody who's been able to manipulate these subatomic particles in any way. There is certain evidence that maybe some states they move into may be changed by anticipation. But that does not mean that we can, by an act of will, direct will, bring about our own health or whatever. However, you know, we have the placebo effect, and clearly the placebo effect works. If you believe in something enough or disbelieve in it, it won't take place. Now, where I'm going with this, my latest work, and I'm doing a lot of research on this, is I want to know more about how much we can manipulate our reality around us. And I'm interested in the creation of entities that we can create by our own anticipations, bring them into existence. Mm. And in my last book, and I'm now researching with two researchers on this to do something, there was something called the Philip Experiment that took place in 1971 in Toronto, in Canada. And again, look this up, guys. It's very, very interesting. There were a group of researchers who were initially, and there were university researchers and a psychic and a group of parapsychologists. And they were quite fascinated by Ouija. How is it that the glass moves in particular ways? And it seems to be that subliminally or subconsciously, the people doing it are manipulating it in some way. But answers seem to come from Ouija that is not part of the individuals. It seems to be a collective anticipation. So what they decided to do was to take this one step further. And what they did was they decided to create a mythical ghost. They created, one of them went away and wrote a backstory to somebody called Philip Aylesford, who lived in the 1670s in the Midlands in the UK, in Warwickshire. And they knew of a castle in that area, so they hypothetically placed him in this castle. They decided he was in his mid-30s, he was a Catholic nobleman, so therefore he was an outsider after the English Civil War, that he was in a loveless marriage, and he meets a gypsy woman, and he falls in love with her, he gets found out, and he commits suicide. They created this backstory. Then they generated in their own minds that he really existed, and they really played with each other and everything else to make this come about. And it started manifesting. They started getting poltergeist activity. They started getting poltergeist activity that said it was Philip Aylesford, even though the person had been created by the group. They had table levitation. Now, get this. People think that table levitation does not exist or cannot be proven. Check online. They levitated a table on live on television, on Canadian television, where the table levitated. It moved. There's no question about this. So there was some kind of force being created by the group. This creation I call the egregorial. You're creating egregores. We can create other entities through our anticipations. And again, we've known this throughout history. If you look into Enochian magic, they create through Enochian magic egregorials. People like Aleister de Crowley was doing it. People going back into the past, people like John Dee, various other people, and Edmund Kelly. These guys were supposedly doing this, but we're now getting to the point where we know scientifically it can happen. Now, in the belief systems of the Bon tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, they have a concept called the Tulpa, and it's a mind-created entity. And there was a lady called Alexander Neal, who was a Belgian person in the 1930s who traveled around Tibet, and they created a tulpa, her and her associates, the monks created a little monk tulpa, which followed them around, but then became malevolent and evil. And they had to destroy it. They had to mentally make it disappear. Now, my argument is, we seem to be able to create these entities. We know with poltergeists. Poltergeists normally manifest if there's usually a young girl, adolescent girl around in some way, or somebody going through trauma. We also know that sometimes if you're feeling good about yourself, everything seems to work for you. You know, you get in the zone and everything is fine for you. But when you start feeling negative, everything goes wrong.
Isn't that the study of epidemiology? Because Dr. Bruce Lipton talks about this, and he said you can't be in the two states. You're either in one or the other. But that
your thought pattern and being positive will have obviously a positive effect on your body. So it's important to try and stay positive. And he said this study is only started to happen in the late 90s. And there's doctors who are obviously older who are not aware of this and the study of it. And we, more and more people are beginning to study the need to be positive, to be focused because of this reason, because of health reasons. And I'm sure other reasons as well.
Well, they say it's important to understand here the nature of reality. I pointed out about subatomic particles collapsing, but these are the things that make the physical reality that's around you. For instance, the only reason you're sitting on a chair now and you don't fall through it is not because you are touching the chair. Your bottom is not touching the chair. We never touch anything. There's something called electrostatic repulsion, which effectively you're hovering over everything. So when you think you touch something, you don't. We never interface with whatever is out there ever. Now, you look out your window now, you see a world around you. I see a laptop in front of me and I see everything. They're all being created by my brain. They are all being created by my brain. Whatever is out there, we don't know. The brain creates it. There is something called naive realism. And that naive realism is the term that neurologists and perception studies experts call the people that believe what I'm looking at is what's really out there. It's okay. Not.
Question on that then. Obviously, because it's going to go back to the holographic program we're in. But how come then, if that's the case, some people have a really bad shot at life? You know, life just seems to be really bad for them. They just seem to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and everything else. And then other people go through life without any bother at all. What's happening there? Why such a difference between them?
Well, without going into great detail about my cheating, the ferryman hypothesis, which we really haven't got time here. Going back, there was a point you made earlier on about free will. Okay. We believe we have free will. We don't. Okay. It's been proven time and time again. And again, if anybody's interested in the science of this, there's a guy called Dylan Haynes, who's a researcher at one of the German universities. Now, around about 5 or 6 years ago, Marcus de Satoy, who is a British mathematician, did a TV program on UK television on Horizon. And they went out to Dylan Haynes' laboratories. And it was proven and shown to Marcus de Satoy by rigging his brain up with EEGs and everything else as well. The anticipation to say, move your hand, you think you're doing it, don't you? You know, you suddenly grab a cup of tea and you pick it up and you think, I've done that. No, you haven't. Your brain is up to 6 seconds in advance of you. The brain has already decided to make that decision, which suddenly means that free will isn't quite what it seems. But, and an important but, there's something called Everett's Many Worlds Interpretation of Quantum Physics. And this effectively, again, comes from the wave-particle duality I was talking about before, the collapse of the wave function. It also is directly related to something called Schrödinger's cat, the thought experiment Schrödinger's cat. It is believed by a growing majority of quantum physicists, people like Max Tegmark, people like David Deutsch, some of the top guys. This is one of trillions and trillions and trillions of universes. In each of those trillions of universes, there's a version of Alan and a version of Tony. So in which case, every outcome of every decision you can possibly make is already encoded in the program. Again, there'll be people out there listening to this. Oh, for God's sake, this guy's absolutely nutcase. Okay, read the last paper that Stephen Hawking wrote with a guy called Thomas Hertog of CERN. This is Stephen Hawking, not the nutter guy, not the new age wacko, not me, Stephen Hawking. He comes out with something called the top-down hypothesis of quantum physics. He argues that from the first moment of the Big Bang, everything that can happen was programmed in there.
Okay, so question on that. If we have thousands and thousands of parallel universes, and there's thousands and thousands of us, is every choice that we make, are we switching timelines? Are we switching different universes by the choices we make? So even though that free will is pre-controlled or preconditioned or predetermined, the choice we make changes the timeline.
The wave function that I mentioned before, the wave function of your reality, the collective wave function, the universal wave function, the Schrodinger wave function, is collapsed depending upon the decisions you make. Every time you make a decision to do anything at all, the universe collapses to anticipate the outcomes of that decision. Okay? And it happens all the time. It's happening continually. Again, in my new book, I'll be doing the science of this. Because this means, in effect, and get this, I can prove that you and everybody listening to this program are immortal. Okay?
Okay, that's interesting. I've heard this before, actually.
Okay? Because, and again, in the new book, I discuss this in detail. Max Tegmark, a Swedish-American cosmologist. Again, go onto YouTube and look up quantum suicide. And look at the science of this. You exist in your universe, and you can never not exist in your universe. I do talks, and whenever I do talks, one of the things I turn around to people and say is, don't you find it extraordinary that in your life, you've seen people die? You never die. And you never die because the quantum function of your universe needs you to continue to exist. Now, I argue that at the point of death, you don't die. You fall out of time.
Well, there's an exchange of energy. And, you know, Einstein said, energy doesn't die. It just changes form.
Well, it wasn't Einstein. It's the second law of thermodynamics.
Oh, okay.
The second law of thermodynamics is that energy can only change into other substances. It can't be destroyed. Yeah. And this is an important point because it brings me down to the real science of my hypothesis. Mm. It's to do with black holes. It's to do with something called Hawking radiation. It's to do with what's called a holographic model of the universe. Mm. And again, this is hard science. This is not woo-woo stuff. Okay? Mm. Believe me, this is not woo-woo. What I'm going to be telling you now is taken directly from an article in New Scientist magazine written by a guy called Jacob Bekenstein. Okay? You know, look it up. It's out there in the ether. You can read it. This universe is holographic. The universe is holographic, and it's created out of data. It's created out of information. There's a guy called Shannon, who in the 1950s, at Bell Laboratories, proved that information is what makes everything. Information is physical. They've discovered recently that information actually gives off radiation. It gives off energy, which effectively means that it is physical. So everything is mathematical. Everything is, you know, like in the Matrix where you have all the green digits and binary code. Yeah. That is it. Mm. And what we are doing by observing this, we are creating this digital recreation of reality. Okay. And all of this is encoded on the edge of the expanding universe. You know that 14.8 billion years ago, 13.8 billion years ago, I correct myself, the Big Bang took place. Now, the Big Bang wasn't big and it wasn't a bang. Okay. And the universe started to expand. Without going into details about this, it was a very weird thing that happened supposedly in the first nanosecond of the Big Bang, so called hyperinflation, where the universe expanded thousands of times faster than the speed of light. Get that? That's the only way they can accommodate something called the cosmic background radiation. It's the same in all directions. The universe, which is impossible, mathematically and scientifically impossible. So they had to come up with this model. But that's another aside, which I discuss in the new book. So as the universe expanded out, you can imagine this huge expanding sphere, can't you? Like an inflating balloon.
Yeah.
Now imagine as the balloon now has been inflating for 13.8 billion years. So effectively, it's 13.8 billion light years in every direction from wherever you are in the universe. And this is the other thing. Everything is relative to your perceptions. There's things called the Onuru effect, which actually proves that even physical matter is different for different people traveling at different speeds. Okay? So time is different. Einstein said this. But now we know that matter is exactly the same as light and time. Because we know time dilates. As you get to the speed of light, time stops. You know, there are all these weird things. But effectively, the universe expands outwards. I mentioned earlier on about Planck. Max Planck, who was the guy that started the whole revolution of quantum physics in December 1900, when he presented a paper in Berlin. The Planck scale is the smallest size possible. But of course, a Planck point, by the way, it is pronounced Planck, not Planck. I'm pronouncing it the German way. The Planck point, a point is just a point. In order to get length, you have to have a line. And then to create area, you have to create a square. So the smallest part of area is a Planck square. They believe, and they've done, I don't know how they've done this calculation, but this will blow your mind. They have calculated how many Planck squares would exist on the inside of the expanding universe. Then they calculated how many bits of information, binary bits, would be needed to describe mathematically in the encoding of all the matter in the universe. It's exactly the same figure. I don't know how they do it, but this stunned people. When the scientists did the calculation, they went, hold on a minute. How can this be? And they said, it's because we are existing in a two-dimensional hologram that we think is three-dimensional, and it's being projected inwards from the edge of the universe. So the question is, who's designed the hologram? Who's designed the program? What is going on here?
That's what I was just going to say to you. I was just going to say to you, the next question is, who designed a holographic program? Who's designed this? Who's in control? And, well, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, there are two answers to this. The first one is that it just is. This is the way reality works, which is not an answer. But we always have to fall back on Thomas Paley. Remember Thomas Paley, the theologian, in his Proof of God, said if you walk along the seashore and you pick up a shell and you look at it and you think, my God, that had to be designed because the way it looks. We have this programming that we think, because we're human, we think that things have to be designed in some way.
Yeah,
it might just be that's the way the universe works. Because remember, the universe came from a point, the whole universe came from nothing. 13.8 billion years ago, every single atom, every single subatomic particle in this universe, all the energy fields, all came out of a point nothing, which is extraordinary in itself. Scientists believe this, but they poo-poo telepathy. But there you go. That's how they work. So it's expanded outwards. I don't know where I was going with this now. So if that is the case, then... If it just was, that's fine. But if it was designed, who could have designed it? Okay. Guy called Nick Bostrom, I think in 1994 or might have been 1999, who's a mathematician at Cambridge. He applied Moore's Law. Now, you know from computing, you know Moore's Law, the idea that the computing power on printed circuit boards doubles every 2 years.
Yeah. But can I just add to that? I actually read a book about Moore. And he said that he didn't actually say that.
Really?
Yeah. I actually got a book and I was reading an interview, and he said that every 18 months or whatever, the technology doubles, increases, right? And that is a common misconception by people who keep quoting Moore on that. And I read an interview and he said, I never said that.
Thank you for that. I need to rediscover that and find out who exactly said that. But Moore's Law has been known to have applied.
Yeah.
And in recent years, I think they've expanded it to 3 years, I think, or maybe four. But so if you extrapolate that for 1,000 years, as long as we have the ability to get smaller and smaller in terms of our computing power. And we now know from quantum computing, which is a whole area that I haven't got time to go into at the moment, quantum computing, which now is a fact, Google is doing it, the Chinese are doing it. This means that you can quantum compute. Get this. This is the many worlds interpretation in effect. It means that you can do all the calculations in the multiverse. Okay? So it means that we already know from virtual reality that you can create a program that will look like reality. You know, I've got my headset in here somewhere. But, for instance, this... you can't see it because it's not on film. But, you know, I have my Oculus headset. You know, and I put my Oculus headset on. I'm in another virtual reality. I did this with my mother-in-law a couple of days ago when she put the headset on, and I showed her where you can fly through a Salvador Dali painting. and go all the way around it, and inside it, you see the elephants on sticks and everything else as well. It's extraordinary. She, her mind was blown. She couldn't believe what she was seeing. Now, if we can do that now with our computer technology, imagine what you could do with quantum computing. Imagine how what you could render. Now, Bostrom argued, if we don't destroy ourselves through warfare and nuclear war and everything else, what will we do with all this computing power? Well, he argues, we'll create Sims. You know, you mentioned earlier on about the Sims and everything, and, and we'll create Sims because that's what we'll do. Now, we've already been able to render a very small part of the universe using computer technology. So you could render with computing power they've got literally a whole planet or a whole universe. And what are you going to populate that universe with? Well, probably people, because you want to see how they evolve. You want to see what they do. So what would you do? You would create avatars of people who have died, and you would place them in the simulation. And they would have to be experiencing, to make decisions, they'd have to be experiencing things, because otherwise it's boring.
Yeah, totally.
Okay? And this is what Bostrom argued. I argue in my Cheating the Ferryman hypothesis, it's cleverer than that. It's much, much cleverer than that. It's to do, and I don't know whether it's been designed or not, but there's so much evidence that this universe has been designed.
Well, do you believe
that? I just finish one point that I will say. One thing that I think we have a clue to just how this universe has been designed, and it's just one of many, a total eclipse of the sun. What happens? The sun is completely to the minutest size obscured by the moon. Completely.
Yeah.
Because they're exactly the same size relative to our viewpoint, even though there's 800 times difference between the size of the disk of the sun and the disk of the moon. And this is because for the first time in history, it's only been for the last 2,000 years, that this has been the case. The moon was further away or closer. But now that we're able to look up in the skies and realize it, it's perfect. Now, the chances of that are vanishingly small. Look at the other planets of the other moons of the solar system. All the moons are much smaller than their main disk. But ours isn't.
Yeah.
Now, there is something called the cosmological anthropic principle, written by John Barrow and Frank Tipler. And these are quantum physicists and cosmologists, and they wrote a whole book about what's called the Goldilocks enigma. Another British writer has written about this as well, Davis. He calls it the Goldilocks enigma. This universe is fine-tuned for the evolution of conscious life, fine-tuned to it, to the point of ridiculousness. Okay? Now, either if there's only ever been one universe, this universe has got it right first time. Now, if there are billions of universes in the Everett's Many Worlds interpretation, it's just a coincidence we live in this universe that it was right. But if there's only ever been one, it's definitely been designed. Or it is designed in some way. And what do I think it's designed for? This is getting deeply philosophical here. I believe that we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. Okay?
Bill Hicks.
Bill Hicks, correct. Bill Hicks used the phrase, well done, well spotted, yeah. Then over to Bill for the news, for the weather. Bill Hicks used this phrase, and what he's doing is he's been reading quantum physics and everything else as well, and he used a lot of quantum physics in his writings. The idea goes back to the ancient belief systems of things like Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, Kashmiri Shaivism, Buddhism, and lots of other belief systems, where they believe that we are all one consciousness. In Vedanta, we are all emanations of Brahman. Mm. Okay? Now, it's again something that is not original to me, and I think it was an English guy who was based in America in the 1960s and 1970s that came up with this idea, but it's a brilliant one. It's the idea, and his name will come to me in a second, but the idea is, imagine you're God, a singular consciousness that just exists. You've got all eternity. How boring is that? So what you do is you create a reality where you create beings and entities that are all you. And you can go into each of them and suffer from what Plato called amnesis, forgetting. And you forget that you're God, or whatever you are, and you go in and you literally live lives through the eyes and senses of all your emanations, all your avatars within the simulation. In which case, you can live so many different lives. And if there's a multiverse, it means that you can live every life differently.
Okay, but let me add to that. I heard about this. But the goal of Source, when it's split up and everybody is a part of Source, the goal is to get back to Source.
Correct.
To learn, go through these lives, but to come back to the collective or the infinite being that is Source.
Or more importantly,
journey to learn to come, to forget where he came from, to learn the journey, go through this journey of life to get back to Source.
Back to where he was.
Yes.
In other words, this is the whole thing about the universe bringing itself into existence by the act of observation of the entities within it. Now, a guy called John Archibald Wheeler, again, look him up, really famous physicist. He actually did a thought experiment to prove that the act of observation not only brings in the universe that we see now, it brings in the universe as it was billions of years ago. For instance, we perceive quasars, and there's something called gravitational lensing, where he did a thought experiment to prove that the wave function of particles that have existed billions of years ago is brought into existence by the act of observation now. And the reason why that is, time, as Einstein said, time is an illusion. So what we think of as time isn't. You know, that time is not what it seems at all. Time is completely elastic. And my final point is, my cheating the ferryman then argues that when you die, you just get reborn again as yourself.
Well, I was going to say about that, the whole death process, because do you believe that, like the movie Avatar, that because we're in this holographic program, you know, some people believe that when you die, the time of death, just imagine somebody taking a VR set off your eyes and go, what do you think of that program? And then you're in physicality, that you are in this holographic program as part of your learning. Yeah, so some people have that belief that we are, this is a holographic program. We are not who we think we are from a physicality point of view. It's when we die that the VR headset comes off and they go, there you go, what do you think of that?
Maybe. I think it's more complex than that. I think when we die, we just get reborn again and we go back and we live our lives again in a slightly different way. Whereas in the first... that this is one of many lives, but I argue that in the second life we split into what I call the daemon and the eidolon, and the eidolon is your game player. So in which case, in your second and multiple lives after that, effectively you are an on-screen avatar of a computer game of your life, where the game player is the person that remembers what you did last time. And this is why we have spirit guides. This is why we have inklings that things are wrong. This is why we have deja vu. This is why we have precognition. Because people, you know, all these people, they can't explain precognition. I can. They can't explain deja vu. I can. My hypothesis explains it.
Do you believe in doppelgangers?
I wrote about doppelgangers in my book, The Daemon, A Guide to Your Extraordinary Secret Self. Yes, I do. And I believe that doppelgangers are manifestations of your own daemon that's coming in. And I'll give an example of this. In 1820, something like that, Percy Bysshe Shelley was staying in Italy, and he was staying with two friends of his. And 2 days before he died, he was walking along the balcony of this villa they were staying in the Ricci in Italy, and his own doppelganger came towards him and turned round and said, "Are you happy?" He was so enthralled, intrigued by this, and he then went on this boat trip, and he was drowned. Okay, so the doppelganger tends to manifest itself when we start to get near the end of our lives. It's the daemon manifesting itself in our lives to start to guide us and prepare ourselves for the next iteration. Now, again, what is fascinating about Shelley, there is a poem he wrote on the death of another poet, and I can't remember which one it was now. But effectively, the poem describes being lost at sea with the wind and the rain whipping around in a boat, lost and about to die. He predicted his own death in that poem because his daemon was warning him probably to not go on the boat. The daemon failed that time. Next time round in Percy Shelley's life, the daemon would warn him more effectively and would stop him going there, and he would have then survived that death. And this is what the daemon does. The daemon guides us, but the daemon can only guide us in the things he knows or she knows. For example, if you play a third-person computer game, you only know the story of the game and the narrative of the game as far as you got to last time you played it. You don't know anymore. And this is why deja vu stops when you get older. It is a known fact, and nobody can explain this except for me. Deja vu, you get older, it gets less and less, and there's a point in your life where deja vu stops. And it starts again just before you die.
Do you believe that deja vu is a sign? Some scientists believe that it's just a chemical imbalance.
Say again, is it what?
Yeah, some scientists believe that deja vu is just a chemical imbalance. That's all it is.
Total bollocks. Mm. They have no idea what deja vu is. Chemical imbalance, how does that explain precognitive deja vu? How does it explain people I know and witnessed who have temporal lobe epilepsy who go into deja vu states and actually say things that are about to happen next? Mm. I've got a friend of mine who has a tumour on his pineal gland. He actually has deja vu sensations where he knows what's going to happen for the next 3 or 4 seconds. That is inexplicable. If you read most psychology books, they will cite the Robert Efron explanation for deja vu. And it's basically the visual pathways hypothesis that one eye effectively and the non-dominant hemisphere processes the visual system a split second before the dominant hemisphere does. So you get this feeling of repetition. That is 0.5 of a second. When I get deja vu sensations, it's far greater than that. Mm. And it's a sensation totally that I have been here before. It is not evidence of reincarnation, I may add. Mm. Because if it was reincarnation and I think I'm here, I would be dressed in Victorian clothing. I would be dressed as an ancient Egyptian. If I have a deja vu sensation now, it's a deja vu sensation of Anthony Peake in his study, watching a video screen, looking out on a summer's day. Mm. It's me in my life. Yeah. That is the deja vu. So to say it's reincarnation is, again, total kike. Okay? Yeah. So they say it's chemical imbalance. They don't know what chemicals they are. They never say that. You know, they are... Do you know how many? There are 72 different explanations of deja vu. 72.
Wow.
In a book written recently, there's a researcher in deja vu. I can't think of his name now, but he wrote a book about it. And there's 72 explanations, one of which is mine, which is cited in his academic book. There is far more to deja vu. If you just think it's a visual thing, but people get deja senti, they actually hear something and hear it again. Mm. People, you know, it's just extraordinary. It's not explained. It's not explained at all.
I think science has a habit when they don't understand something, they try and fit their science around the situation or the problem that they're trying to solve, rather than you can turn around and say, I don't know. Maybe they're afraid to do that. Maybe again, it goes back to before we went live about belief systems and about challenging on belief systems and people saying not knowing something, maybe in the science, the faculties, you know, dealing with information all the time, for them to turn around and go, we don't know. Maybe they don't want to be perceived as not knowing something. So they come up with some convoluted.
Cognitive dissonance. Mm. It's the idea that we believe, and if you've invested your whole career in a particular scientific viewpoint, and I've got scientific friends of mine that you know, are stuck in the rut. They really are not seeing the evidence as it stands. Quantum physics, most biologists and things don't even think about quantum physics. There's a guy called John Joe McFadden at the moment that's doing some fascinating work on the quantum physics implications of biological systems, which is intriguing. But effectively, they don't want to know. But, and I have this, I do events with scientists regularly, and this always happens, whereby they'll be saying what I say doesn't make sense, or, you know, telepathy doesn't exist, blah, blah, and all these other things. And I'll say the opposite, and, you know, we'll sort of semi fall out on it. Then we'll go for a drink afterwards. And while we're having the drink, we'll have a few beers. Then one of the scientists will go, and it always happens, and he'll go, yeah, I don't agree with anything you say. However, one time this happened to me, and I've never been able to explain it. And then another one will pop up, and I'll say, so why, you can't explain that, can you? No. And you know it happened, don't you? Yes. So why do you diss everybody else having these experiences as being hallucinations? Whereas when you've had it, you can't explain it. And they turn around and they always say the same thing. They say, I cannot risk my career.
Yeah.
Coming out and saying these things. And I'll give an example of just how bad this is. The only living quantum physicist who's won the Nobel Prize in the UK is a guy called Brian Josephson. He invented something called the Josephson junctions. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, there was going to be a celebration of British Nobel Prize winners in stamps. Do you know that Josephson was not allowed to be on those stamps? Because he researches telepathy. Mm. And even though he's a top quantum physicist and a Nobel Prize winner, they banned him. Mm. This is how bad it is. Yeah. And it's because we think, and as most sciences all through history think, we're at the point we know everything. Mm. In 1897, Michelson of the Michelson-Morley experiment at the University of Chicago stood up when they were opening some new device, and he turned round and he said, science is almost there now. We know almost everything. All we're going to be doing in the future is calculating to the sixth decimal point the things we understand. There was one young scientist who a few years before was debating whether to become a scientist or a musician. And his tutor told him, become a musician because there's nothing more to be discovered in physics. That young man was Max Planck. And in 1900, Max Planck, in his ability, is wanting to understand something called the infrared catastrophe, came up with a theory that energy comes in quanta, little packages. That was the quantum revolution, and it changed everything. And the two things that Michelson said were a problem was the electromagnetic, the infrared catastrophe, and something called the photoelectric effect. And in 1905, Einstein had his wonderful year where he wrote three papers, and one of them, he explained the photoelectric effect. Again, using quantum mechanics and quantum physics. Everything changed, and our science is there now. They're sitting around congratulating themselves, saying they know everything. I call it the chauvinistic worldview. That they believe that they know everything. We don't. We're at the start, not at the end.
But this is just like repeating over again, because I remember there was an academic in the late 1800s turned around and he said, everything that can be invented has been invented. And he made that kind of bold, arrogant statement. I mean, even now when I speak to people about science, and I always say, well, I'm going to expand that, and I say man-made science. We know, as human beings, we don't know there could be other civilizations out there that could be a million years ahead of us, that they could come in and say, well, actually, all your science is irrelevant because here's the real science and the laws of physics that you have at this moment. Well, actually, you know, they're wrong. So we have to be able, again, we can fight over whether the moon has made of cheese or not, but it goes back to our belief systems. And are we prepared to challenge what we believe and to be able to change when new information comes in that challenges what we've been indoctrinated with and we've learned over the years? And I think that's, for me, from a psychological point of view, is so much more important, because that tells you a lot about the individual who's prepared to challenge their belief system, you know, and not be stuck in the academia and the information that they've invested in over the years.
I agree with you to a certain extent here, but we have to acknowledge, and it is so important to acknowledge this, that our modern science is very effective. Without modern science, we wouldn't be communicating in the way we're doing. But then again, without quantum physics, computers wouldn't work. But there's another story. But then again, without quantum physics, the sun wouldn't shine either, which in my new book I discuss. But, you know, they've done wonderful things. But what they don't do is they're not involving themselves in the real problems. The things like, for instance, there's something called the hard problem. And the hard problem in 1995 at the University of Arizona, a young Australian philosopher by the name of Chalmers stood up David Chalmers, and said that the easy problem of consciousness is understanding how the brain works, understanding the chemicals, the neurochemicals, and the neurology of the brain. The hard problem is how inanimate matter reacting with electricity in my head and Alan's head creates Anthony and Alan. How consciousness is created from something completely and utterly different. Physical matter is not consciousness. And however much they pretend and however much they suffer from all kinds of hubris, they are not a first base understanding the basics of what it is to be human and have an experience. So you know what they do? They have something called eliminative materialism. This is really serious stuff. Eliminative materialists like Daniel Dennett and the Churchlands genuinely believe, this is science as it is at the moment. We think we're conscious, but we're not. We're being fooled. We're being fooled into thinking we're conscious. Now, I can't fool a stone into thinking anything because a stone doesn't think. Whereas even the ridiculousness of a statement to say, you've got to be aware to be fooled, haven't you?
Yeah.
But they can't even see the nonsense that they're talking. And it irritates the hell out of me. And, you know, I want to engage with these people continually. And they keep turning me down. I've been invited on 3 or 4 occasions to speak at university skeptic groups. Do you know what? They check me out. They think initially they're going to get a new age wacko. And they're going to have a bit of fun. And then they check me out. And without exception, they pull out. And you know why they pull out? Because they cannot answer my questions. They cannot dig into my knowledge of quantum physics because my arguments, you know, how far down the do you want to go? Do you want me to explain Heisenberg's uncertainty principle? Because I can, in detail. I know what I'm talking about. And they don't like that. They want to be superior. They want to say, you're not a trained physicist. No, I'm not. I'm not a trained physicist. But then again, who, to understand the whole gamut of human experience, you can't be a trained anything. You can't be a Renaissance man anymore. You've got to know neurology. You've got to know quantum physics. You've got to know history, sociology, ethnography. Yeah. All these things can be thrown in. And that's what I try to do.
Haven't been indoctrinated. You've been educated. This is the thing. The system, the education system, indoctrinates so many people, and they tell you what you can't and can't do. And time again, I've done interviews with people who said to me, because I wasn't indoctrinated, I actually went off and tried the things they said you can't do, and you end up that you can do them. So when you go into the indoctrination system, you're being given limitations.
I don't agree with you on that. The education system is fine. There's no you're not being indoctrinated. You know, there's not this worldwide bloody conspiracy where people are indoctrinating us. What they're doing is we're being taught what the people are at ease with. Okay. But, and I would argue this, and I get this a lot from people, people like me are indoctrinated because I went to university, I went to 2 universities, I did, you know, did postgrad and everything else. Whereas you'll get the idiot down the pub who's got 2 bloody GCSEs and doesn't know anything about anything, but he knows about everything. And this is what's wrong at the moment with the internet. This is what's wrong with Facebook. There's too many idiots out there who think they know. It's the Dunning-Kruger effect. I invest my time. I see other books on similar subjects to me, and they are rubbish. They jump to conclusions which are nonsense and everything else. I make the time to go to the academic papers, dig deeper into the academic papers, talk to the scientists, challenge the scientists. I don't turn around and say, you've been indoctrinated, because it's not indoctrination. It's what culture believes is correct. This is why people don't talk about quantum mechanics and quantum physics. It's not because they're not allowed to. I've got a whole bookcase full of books on quantum mechanics. If we were being indoctrinated, they'd get rid of the internet. They'd get rid. Why are people allowed to do interviews like this one if we're being controlled in some way? Do you get my point?
Well, no, I get your point, and I could argue that point, but I know we've reached that time. So maybe we're going to have to do a part 2, Anthony, I think.
I think we will.
Because I could get into there, and I could I can get into that subject matter for you, and I can give you a couple of examples as well. And again, it's for me anyway, it's all about challenging your belief system and being prepared to change if evidence is presented that challenges what you believe. And I think that's the important bit. But I'd like to say a big thank you for coming on the show. Give your give out all your links where people can find you, and a mention on your book when that's going to be released, if it's coming out soon. What's the name of the book? Where can people buy it? Give all that information out there.
Okay, yeah. In terms, because I'm not self-published, my books are in all, you can order my books in bookshops. You can go into bookshop and order it. Sometimes the books are on the shelves, both in England, Ireland, and the English-speaking world. If you want personal copies, I sell the books off my website as well, which are signed copies. Depends where you're located, what I sell the books at the normal price of a bookshop, but of course I have to send them to you. Website is anthonypeake.com. I also am extremely active on Facebook and on Instagram. Facebook, you'll find me as Anthony Peake quite easily. If you want to check me on Instagram, I'm CheatTheFerryman54. But again, you just search on there, you'll find me there. I also have my own podcast called the Anthony Peake Consciousness Hour, and Anthony Peake Consciousness Hour Incon, which goes out every week. Every Monday it goes on out live on Facebook Live, and then the next day is uploaded onto my YouTube channel, which again, just go onto YouTube and look up Anthony Peake. We've got well over 100 interviews with the world's leading thinkers. And I'm talking, you know, postdoctorally qualified individuals, you know, really know their stuff.
Yeah.
And we go into great detail about the science. What else? The new book, I've written, this will be my 12th book. This will be published in the UK, USA, Canada, probably spring of next year. I'm still discussing with my publishers what we're going to call it, but I think it's going to be called Cheating the Ferryman, A New Paradigm of Existence, probably, but I'm not sure yet. Also, if you are interested in reading my books in foreign languages, I've got at least one book in every major European language and most minor European languages, so you can read them in your own language if you're interested in doing that as well. That's about it, I think, really. Just to say, it's been wonderful chatting to you, Alan.
Anthony, just stay with me there for a minute. We'll just go off to a musical break. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
Well, there you go. A very interesting interview with Anthony Peake, and quite controversial on some of the things that he said. And I think I'll probably will be doing a part two, because I think I have counter arguments for Anthony there on a few things regarding indoctrination rather than education. And I have a few bits of evidence to kind of back that up as well. So I think a part two, Anthony, will be on the cards. Okay, so the second interview is going to be with a lady called Lucia Dashkovic. And I'm just going to read out her bio. But just to give you out the phone number, which is 046-927-1212, and internationally 00353-469271212. The first t-shirt was won by a chap called Ewan Sean, and he's based on the Cork and Limerick border, and he rang in just after I played the actual pre-record of Anthony, and he gave me the right answer. And the question was, what radio show did I co-host before Circle of White Light Radio? And of course, it was Open Your Mind Radio. And he was spot on. So he wins a t-shirt, and that will be ringing its way down to him in the next few days. So we have a second t-shirt to be won. And again, the same thing applies. Get your phone number 046-927-1212. I'm going to ask you a question after I read out Lucia's bio. And then we're going to play the podcast, the pre-record of Lucia. And then whoever phones in first will be and has the right answer to the question, obviously will win a t-shirt. And it's Christmas, which is a good thing. Okay, so Lucia is from the former Soviet Union, living in Chicago and working predominantly with Russian-speaking groups. She works privately with English and Russian-speaking patients who come to her for healing most of the time after having exhausted all other avenues for health. She was born clairvoyant with a specialty in healing and teaching, which she has been doing for the last 42 years. Healing the unhealable and curing the incurable are very often the results she achieves with our patients. Her healing system, the Liquid Consciousness, is a healing system for the new age of unity and love consciousness. She has been given this system by the Source as a gift to humanity and to support us in the shift. Lucia is legally ordained minister, teacher of the Mastery of Life Alchemy, Light Body Creation, international speaker and life coach. Her education is medical, pathological, technological. Her gift and mission on Earth is to support the new consciousness integration with our physical bodies so that we can ascend in this lifetime. So it's going to be interesting to hear Lucia and the what she says. Okay, so here's the question. Okay, phone number 046-97-1212. The question is, what was the full name of my co-host on Open Your Mind Radio? And I'll leave you with this podcast with Lucia. I'd like to introduce a lady called Lucia. I had a quick Skype with Lucia a few days ago. And Lucia is a healer. She's based in America. And she's gone through an awful lot in her life. And she's now using her skills and abilities to help a lot of people regarding healing. Good evening, Lucia. How are you doing?
Good evening, and I'm so happy to be on your show. And thank you very much for inviting me, because it's really a big pleasure to bring your love, light, and gratitude and new earth to us and to everyone on this planet. It's amazing.
Well, thank you for coming on, because obviously the way things are at the moment and the way the planet is and the way people are hurting, both physically and mentally, then healing is a very, very important part to what's needed now on the planet moving forward. And maybe this was divine source or divine timing. Maybe something down the line is getting us together because there's a reason for it. And I did see your videos before and I found them quite interesting as well. So thank you for coming on. Now, before we get into talking about healing, let's talk about you. Let's talk about your journey, because I know you told me that you had cancer twice and you healed yourself with that. And that is phenomenal to do that as well, you know, on your own, to be able to heal with cancer, because so many people lose their lives with it. So tell us, we'll try and, I know you've done an awful lot, but we're going to try and keep it condensed as much as we can. And I know that's very difficult, but the main parts, because I want to know what started you on your journey.
My life is more than soap opera, actually. And from one way, it's really amazing. It's create my life here in America. When I came accidentally, I did not even plan. I tried to make money for my family and stay in forever. So it's practically from one way, from the human way, it's a very tough journey. From another way, my lightness of being all my life, because I was born like as a medical intuitive, as a like time traveler, as we'll say clairvoyant. And all my young age, I saw different dimensions. I lived there because I was born in former Soviet Union. And it's tough and dense energy where we was suppressed. And it helped me to, I will use word survive, but it's not really surviving, because intuitively I knew what I should do. I knew how to live, and I had like 3 times near-death experience, and I absolutely still remember what is going on. The last one, it was 2004, exactly on the Christmas Eve. So always something happened on a Christmas. And my experience with especially near-death experience was always the questioning, is I was like somebody showed up, like walks in, or I am still alive to be here and fulfill my mission. So nothing happened. I was sent back and for helping people to bring them higher dimensional energy, frequency of love and light. It's like configuration of the energy into the physical body. and help them transform themselves or heal. I help people heal themselves. So this is my mission on the planet. And so that's why all my steps in former Soviet Union, in America, brought me to the point after like 10 years ago, my total crash, where I was like settled woman, everything is fine. Finally, I could become homeless with two senior cats. And this was like a brick on my head, like finally, try to think about yourself. Don't like take care of everyone, because the point to if you can help yourself, you can help everyone around.
And, can I just jump in there? Well, two things you said there, which is important. One, you teach people to heal themselves. You don't heal them. So that's empowering people, teaching people how to do it themselves. That's very, very important, especially today. And two, the whole analogy of the oxygen mask on the airplane, and you probably heard that, you know, make sure your mask is on first before you put it on somebody else. So you're right. People have to take care of themselves first before they start treating or helping other people, because you have to make sure that you're 100%, especially as a healer, because you don't want to be taking on their energy or the issues that they have. So you have to protect yourself and be careful as well.
I would say the best point, like you said, put your mask on yourself, then put on your child. So before you cannot help yourself, you cannot help everyone. Actually, it is the rule of the dense energy of the last century. And now it's Aquarius era. It's new golden age. My business is why, like, new golden age therapy I was given like in 2006. And this is the point where the new rules of the new earth, it start to be in a progress. Because first of all, it's a oneness, it's one field, and you cannot blame right hand, it's something wrong with your left hand, because we whole and wholeness of our energy create healing. And finally, this is the new earth rules. When you create something, and if somebody showed up in the front of you and you do not like, so this is your reflection, and you don't have to blame, you don't have to fight with somebody else. It's what we have on the planet now, everyone is fighting. And then it's coming from the next step. It is your responsibility to take care of yourself, to help yourself. And it's coming next step. Everyone is teachers and everyone is students. Mm-hmm. And everything coming for the reason. And if something showed up, especially it's a families, I know now it's a difficult situation with in each family on the planet, I believe. So if you don't like something, don't try to push somebody to do so. It's not going to help anyway. They're going to do whatever they want to do. So take care of yourself. And then when you start to take care, understand and know I'm a teacher, and this is the person as a teacher, and I'm a student, and he is or she's student. So you start think about yourself, you start change yourself, you start to be responsible, and then you create your life. And very important, New Earth rules. It is present moment, because all people functioning out of the body. Usually, if you're out of the body, you cannot help yourself to create your life. So you cannot help yourself, like old way healing, to anyone around.
Okay, so a question there. When you say out of the body, what do you mean by out of the body?
Usually, we are physical body who is squeezed in huge, you know, waste energy of the cosmos, at least for me, into this small body is what we choose where we start to be on this planet. So it is just amazing. And so if you stay inside of your body, you start to manage your body. But how you can manage your body if you stay inside of your body is the present moment, because the past is not exist. The future is just potential, just the moment right now. And if you cage the moment right now, so you start feel your body, you start understand your body, you start understand what is going on around, you choose yourself, and then you can help everyone around, because you become present moment clear, understanding, and start to work with yourself first. And then you can see what is going on around. Mostly people, you know, walking out of the body energetically. I mean, it's our energy, who we are. We are a beautiful soul and free spirit. And we are usually out of the body because no one teach us to be here in the present moment. Now it's a time. So I have a tools how to do it. And I teach every client, every group what I am working with to be at the present moment, use energy tools to help yourself and choose. I want to be here in a balance. And then when you hold your body, energy body, you hold your physical body, you affect your healing. And then you can see how you help everyone around. And then more and more you stay at the present moment in your energy field. You draw the love and light, actually the creator energy, which is the soul we all want, but the parts of us very unique, into your body. And then you make your body less dense, and your spirit and soul, so it's a high frequency, reside in your physicality. And actually at the physical level, it's a part of your body, it's your endocrine system, mostly it's a thymus gland. Thymus gland create the point of creation, higher heart.
When you're talking about making your body more dense, obviously when we die and we leave our physical body, that we are less dense because we're only energy. We don't have the physical 3D body here. But what you're saying is, while we have the 3D body, we can still make our bodies less dense. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. So where we make this our body less dense, so it's bringing more frequency of love and light, actually, to my liquid consciousness. It's a particles, physical configuration of the energy coming into your liquids in the body, and then coming into the organs and dissolve everything what is not love and light. That's it. This is the healing. But person have to take care yourself and your frequency nonstop. But this is just the training or practicing to choose yourself. Because usually people just try to fight, try to help somebody, forgot about themselves. They could not help. The fight bring more density and rejection of other side. And this is the war it's coming usually. So in this situation on our planet, then less we're going to fight and more start to create your better version, your better life for yourself, for humanity, for the earth. Because if you create for yourself, because in new earth rules, everyone is first and everyone is last. You are first on a planet and you're last on a planet. What goes around comes around. So if you create in your sphere of love and light in your body, love, light, gratitude, balance, understanding, acceptance of anything what's happened, then you step in, like from here, from your body, you start managing circumstances, what is around you, and bring people emanating love, light, gratitude, acceptance to everyone on the planet, to everyone and the planet also, because we all one. Nothing, you know, to tear it up and apart, actually.
Well, I call that the karmic boomerang. And the karmic boomerang is like a boomerang. And if you throw it and it's negative energy, the boomerang comes back with negative energy, and the same with positive energy. So that's my nickname for it. I call it the karmic boomerang. What you put out, you get back. It's science. It just makes sense, you know? Now, you mentioned New Earth, and we know that the Earth is going through an ascension period now. And apparently, what I've read, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but what I've read is that the Earth is the first planet to ascend with human beings on it. We're bringing our bodies with us. But what we're seeing now, at the moment, is as the frequencies are going up, because Gaia is actually she's ascending, and the frequencies are going up, there's a lot of people now struggling with the energies, especially people who are in the matrix, who are 3D, who are not aware of what's going on, plus the fact that people now who have taken the jab, the vaccine, and a lot of people are suffering health issues. So from your perspective as a healer, what do you see happening with the planet and the ascension process and New Earth? What way do you see that?
First of all, it's amazing stuff, because we have now three planets together at the same time in different timelines and different dimensions, because the human body producing the 3D energy, and 3D energy create this chaos and what we have now. Fears, and this is not like the jobs. This is just the energy of fears. This is the virus of fears. It's a virus, the ancient virus of slavery, fears, etc., which were created long time ago. And right now, we have the 5D Earth, where is available high frequency, but you cannot get there with your physical body if you do not transform your physical body. And physical body to transform, so it's coming together with Earth, with each being on the planet, and this is the physical transmutation, so it has a steps, transmutation, transfiguration, and then transformation, physicality, to make it less dense. So without it, you cannot bring your life and body into the 5D Earth. It exists also with 3D Earth. And this is actually what I am doing with my liquid consciousness, the system what I received long time ago, to transform your physical body, bring the love and light, make like light body physically, and then you can live in the earth of 5D, then you are creating everything through love, light, not emotions, it's stable feelings of love, gratitude, trust, appreciation. You do not even understand different stuff like me. I do not understand even words, the tough words of low vibration of words, because everything is vibration. And in between, we have 4D Earth, but this is not physical one. This is the our way to come through this transformational stuff, transmutation, transfiguration, and then transformation to be in 5D. And this is our mental, emotional, all bodies, what we have, you know, invisible layers, what we got from the first reincarnation, not even on the earth, all our lives. So we going step by step, release all this garbage, what we hold, in our hands, but mostly people, you know, it's hard to go and mentally they understand you cannot carry this baggage with you in 5D, but at the same time at the physical level.
So you're talking about the shadow side, the emotional baggage, the ego, all has to be shed because that's not 5D energy. And the problem we're having with the shadow side, as a lot of people know about, is that if you don't deal with it, it will come up. A lot of people are externalizing now at the moment because they don't want to deal with the shadow side because it's too nasty. So they're projecting and externalizing and they don't want to deal with the shadow side, but they got, and it's the death of the ego because the ego is a 3D thing and it's not on 5D. So they have to deal with it. They've no way around it, but they have to deal with it. And now it's manifesting. It's coming out. And maybe this is why we're seeing a lot of madness on the planet with people, because they just cannot cope because they don't know what's going on. They don't understand the process, where a lot of people like ourselves who do understand it have gone and dealt with our shadow side and come to terms with our ego, and we've said, okay, we control the ego doesn't control us, and it's all balanced and everything else. But for people who don't know any of this stuff, it must be like, you know, a head wreck for them.
Yes, absolutely, because mostly what I you know, understand right now, because I'm working mostly with Russian-speaking people right now, I'm so proud of myself. I get over of the fear to speak English, even I did not learn, I'm just downloading, because my point just download and then I can open my mouth and talk or speak or doesn't matter to present myself. And at the same time, the old way of spirituality, it's the way of separation, because now we see it, we very spiritual. And we do not even think about physical life because it is not spiritual life. And this is separation, bring this chaos what we have right now. And people, you know, very tough for them, open their eyes and open themselves to release the baggage. So without, like if you're so spiritual, your changes in ascension actually coming just from the in the astral realm. But we are here in new golden age. We're not gonna lose this battle, we'll say, because this is what I see, what I receive the information. This is, I believe, the chance where we are really one already. But the winning on a physical level, it goes through each our body, each being on a planet, together with planet, because the elementals, they are divine beings right now, and they are represent us and divinity through our body, through our movement, through our experience. So we all reflection of the Creator in our body, and we are here to show who is the Creator is, who is the source or God, doesn't matter who call, you know, this huge energy of consciousness of love and light. And we are through our experience show, through our personal experience, what it means Creator, love, light, and new earth. And so without elementals, without the earth, we cannot move on, but without everyone on the planet, we also cannot move on. Everyone right now thinking, well, oh, yeah, just...
Okay, well, I have a query with that, because the problem is for people like yourself, myself, and a lot of people listening to the show are all kind of dealing with their shadow side and are dealing with their ego and are spiritually aware and are outside the matrix and they're ready to go. We're all tired. We've all had enough of it. We're all fed up with it and we just want to move on. But there's other people who won't be ready for that. Now, I don't know what information you've got, Lucia, but what I've kind of been told or what I've come across is that there's, if you think of three different methods of changes on the system with people. So we have the people who are the 5D people who are awake and aware and tuned in and ready to move to the East Gate, which is, they call it the East Gate. Then you have the 3D people who are good people, but they're not awake and aware, and they have to go to the West Gate and carry on their journey of learning because they're not ready. They haven't spiritually woke up and become aware. And then you have the real negative psychopathic people. Now, there's a lot of talk about this wave, this incoming wave that's coming in, a solar flare, solar flash, an incoming wave. There's a lot of talk about it. And there's a lot of talk. No, I'm not going to talk about dates because dates come and go. But there is a lot of talk about February, March. You know, there's a couple of people mentioned that. And I'm just wondering, with your downloads, have you got any information to say what could be coming down the line, what could be happening? Is there any wave coming in, or are we, is there something going to be happening? Have you heard anything, or are we just going to be on this planet and we just have to carry on trying to wake people up until we all pass over?
It's a great question, because actually no predictions. And I know, because I don't read anything, like, you know, I'm not interested because I'm receiving my stuff and teaching people. I would say what we are here doing now, November and December, this is the pivotal point to change our life for the next year. And right now we are in a portal where each of us create next year, but not only 2022, huge numerological stuff. We are creating all decades because we are creating physical life on the planet Earth 5D. And what has happened, it's going to be more chaos. From one way, it's going to be disaster. I believe it's the end of the November, December, it's going to be more chaos with this pandemic or something, more chaos with financial system, etc. But it's going to just like start up and show up the way how it's going on. And for the next year, it's going to be a whole year of dismantling of the old systems. But for us who is really conscious and who is really willing to create this life for ourselves and for everyone, especially for our, you know, loved ones, it's going to be an easier way to create better life. So from one way, it's disaster, chaos. From another way, the people who are really conscious and work with physicality, because without physical body, you cannot move on to live in 5D. So you're going to create more and more your better version, your better life. So you're going to bring this example through your body, your experience to everyone around. And then each people will choose. Everyone has a choice. Everyone, it's doing all lives, you know, even in a density life, you know, you choose to go there or no, to be in chaos.
I think that choice has been made. I think everybody's soul, our soul contract, the soul has already, apparently has been, that choice has been made for some people. You know, that's what I heard. I don't know whether that's true, but, you know, because there is this big divide and conquer that's going on. And with the jab, there's been talk about the jab being a game changer, being if you have got the vaccine, then that means that you're going to be going on the 3D timeline or 3D Westgate, because the vaccine was a tester to see about your critical thinking and your ability to be able to understand what was going on, the bigger picture. And now I know that some people had to get the jab to keep their job. So I'm sure that will be brought into account, because source knows intent very well. What was your intent? Did you do it because you had to do it to for your work to feed your kids? Or did you do it because you believed everything on the TV that all the, you know, the politicians were telling you. So I think choices have been made. Now, I don't know. Maybe we will look back at this interview in 6 months' time, and February and March will go and nothing happens, which is normally the case, because I've had it. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. And normally when people say stuff, chances are 100% nothing happens. So we'll see what happens. But I'm just curious that you talk about New Earth and you talk about ascension. Now, have you come across a problem with, if you're on a 5D frequency, Dan, if you go shopping, people don't even see you?
This is the lessons, what I'm learning. It's a lessons, lightness of being, to be in the physical body. And this is on my skin. I know what is it. But from one way, what I am teaching, actually, and these tools, what I am presenting each my client, actually, it's bringing you at the physical level, present moment, and you be visible for the people who is really nice, who is really willing to live in light. You stop to see the people with energy of the 3D, who is screaming, who is blaming, I went through these lessons, everyone is blaming me because they are coming even in my space. They got the cleansing right away. It's physical cleansing, and they are blaming me. I'm like trying to even kill them. So then I was like worried, not worried. I know what is going on, but it was my reaction. I'm like, oh my God, try to explain. Then now these kind of people do not even show up. And when you're going to shopping, you know, when you stay in the present moment, you get your hands, you want an apple, your apple gonna be right away in your hands. So it means if you stay in the present moment, high 5D dimensions, so everything is coming to you. You are not chasing to do something. So usually when I'm going shopping, I say, guys or angels, doesn't matter. Should I go to the store? If I go to the store, like, show me if I need something. Because I know I am going there, like physically it's drawing me. And then suddenly it showed me what I need to get. And then people right away showed up. I bought this chair, my chair. And like, I'm thinking, oh my God, I need it. And then asked one lady, she sent me a manager. The manager brought somebody who gonna put together. They made the job. They gave me like $100 or more bucks less. And it was a surprise because it was no discounts, no sale or something. So when you stay in the present moment and you see what you need is going to show up in the front of your nose and bring the people who's going to serve you right away. And we are learning how to communicate with the 3D people, because if you are calm, in love, understanding, and gratitude, everyone wanted, and everyone, 3D people coming to you with ego, etc., it's makes them vulnerable. They want it, but they doesn't know how to get it. So they are like a babies in the playground. And so then when you stay at the present moment on 5D, you know how to communicate with this kind. People go to shopping, you come in a store, and your people gonna see you. And you're not gonna go there where it's not for you, actually.
Oh, are you saying that you're putting out the energy and you're letting the source energy, you're letting your own energy decide what you want, where you go and everything else, to make sure it's beneficial for you? And then if you get a feeling that you shouldn't go there, more intuitive, an intuitive feeling of where you should go and what you should be doing.
This is not intuitive. I would say it is already your body consciousness. We are creating to live in a 5D conscious, healthy, balanced body. And your body doesn't think from your brain, logical brain, oh, where should I go? Oh, I need to get the chance, like blah, blah, blah. No, you are physically, you save your time. If you know something, your body knows. It's like everything showed up in the front of your face. And your body consciously healing yourself is just create healing inside of your cells condition when everything what is not love and light will dissolve automatically when you hold this high five and upper vibrational condition inside of you. So you are not in emotions, you are in feelings of love, because love is emotions. You can kill yourself from love, you can struggle, you can sing a song, but love as a feelings, it's stability, it's certainty, it's graciousness, it's understanding. You from like from the point of the presence inside of your body, you are manage your space. It's each moment, and you are become a reflection of the creator. It's the physical body, and from the form you create form of your life through your experience.
So what about manifestation?
And this is the manifestation. Change yourself, be present, everything coming to you. Because, you know, we have in Russian like animation where somebody stay at home, and if like we'll say like that, if you stay at home inside of your body, so universe bring into you, because you have a tangible energy, it can be recognizable, you know, here is somebody over here, and you get your intention. It's like magic, the highest magic, what I'm using and teaching. It's intention and attention, like a focus, exactly what you want to create. You create this possibility to bring anything if you own your body and it is coming to you and universe has given it to you. If you are out of the body, so universe give it to somebody else who stay at home and creating what they want, actually. So this is the manifestation, intention, and attention, focus now. And then you can create a future present moment. And it's lots of techniques what I am, you know, teaching people how to create your body together with mind and spirit to reside in your physicality, change your frequency, create your energy field, and then you are receiving everything. But this is the process when you need to train yourself. I'm helping, I'm teaching, I'm giving the tools. I train with my energy and sessions. And then people are supposed to do homework.
Okay, so you're training people to heal themselves, which is important. And it, that covers a wide range of areas, not just the physical, but the spiritual, the mental, and everything else. But you had cancer twice. So how did you deal with that from a healing point of view?
I would say my first experience when I were 26 years old, I lost my whole family. I bury my family. I have like small child. And I believe when I were there in the dense energy of Soviet Union, I was just lightness of being, and this is was like intuitively, I turned on my switch to connect to the source and bring to me what I need, because one doctor cannot, you know, recognize this kind of stuff. Then another doctor sent me to the cancer clinic. And I still remember the fears, but I don't feel inside of my body when I walk the fourth time over there. Then I went through the chemo. My body was practically dying. And then, like, again, one more switch. I have lots of remedies. I use the herbs. And the information start coming. My school friend, she came from Moscow, and she brought some recipes of the herbs, etc., etc. then some combination of the food, because I was dietologist, combination of the food, my body knew what I can eat or not eat. It was like from inside out.
That's like kinesiology. Kinesiology, right, is that kinesiology. Asking your body, right, yeah, whether right. the food is good for you. That's it, yeah, yeah. Yes.
And second time it was in here in America when I suddenly came, and then I decided to stay here, and then I won green card. So I start manifest what I need because it was tough life. And then you concentrate on yourself, not somebody else. Then everything coming to you. And then I was, when I was diagnosed, I decided to go without any doctors. I sign up like release. And I did it by myself through the earth, again, through the food. So I changed my lifestyle with everything. And again, it helps me as a lightness of being. Do not put my fingers in a 3D. I knew precisely what I need, even when I got family that time. So I cook for them. And for myself, it was absolutely different way. So it was conscious combination to bring soul and spirit and source into your body and keep this higher frequency. And then information like Sunrider, like information came to me. Then San Chlorella came to me. It was 90s, the end of 90s, I was here already. And I start using, not like they prescribed, I start using by myself to make my dosage personally. And it helps me step. And then I was still working. And the same time, I did not have any chemo, any support of the doctor, any even tests. I just disconnect myself from the illness. So this is the point. When you start thinking about your better version and the best version, your health, your life, and you disconnect yourself from the 3D condition, your cells become training by itself. It's like they start believe, trust, and they got the faith to bring love, because not love first, the faith. And then love coming because you trust, you have a faith for love, for healing, for your healthy body. So intentionally, I start to create this conscious body in at the end of the 90s. And then I become like, you know, new age healer, because I use Reiki, I use some stuff before. And at the beginning of the 2000s, and 2004, it didn't work for me and for my, we'll say, client, but I got another job now and full-time healer and teacher.
And that's what you're teaching now, and that's what's really needed now at the moment, the healing. Well, Lucia, we've reached that time, unfortunately. Thank you for coming on the show. Brilliant information there. Well done for all the work you're doing and teaching people about healing, because we're going to need it more than ever, especially with COVID. And the jab and everything else that's going on there. Give out all your links. Where can people find you? Give out your web address and your email there, so people, if they want to get in touch with you and talk to you about healing, do you want to give out the information?
Yes. I did not prepare actually yet. But anyway, my email, Lucy, L-U-C-Y, at New Golden Age Therapy, like New Golden Age, plus therapy.com. And we have created the account right now on Telegram, and people start to come in, and it's bringing more people who is interested to stay in the present moment and receive this antidote program, which is dismantling this you know, shots like vaccination, etc., etc. And then Lucia Dashkevich healing.com. It's some part English, part of the website, Lucia Dashkevich healing.com. and Facebook, New Golden Age. And Irene, please tell another you create account on gforce.com, Lucia Dashkevich. It's New Golden Age Therapy. So
New Golden Age Therapy group on GForce, yeah, GForce Network.
Okay, so you're on GForce Network as well?
Yes.
Okay, so am I. I think there's a good few of us on the GForce Network, but that's brilliant. And Irina, who's helping Lucia. Irina, you said there's a Telegram group there as well?
Yeah, there is a Telegram group we just created 2 days ago because of the big interest to the antidote program, antidote to virus, to vaccine program. And the same group is on the GForce Network. We created especially for people who want to heal from the JAP blessings, let's say.
Okay,
and
that's
also
good.
For so, people who want to heal, of course.
Okay, so you have an antidote for the actual jab because so many people who've had the jab and are now reluctant to get any more and are sorry that they actually had taken the jab because of all the effects. Side effects from, well, they say side effects, but they're effects rather than side effects of the jab. And you have an antidote to actually treat the jab. Well, that's brilliant. Irina.
I just want to mention to you that we did a Q&A session a few days ago with people from mainly LifeForce and GForce Circle. And it was a very informative and very interesting. So everybody who wants to see this Q&A, they better contact Lucia and me because YouTube took it down within less than 12 hours immediately and arrested Lucia on the YouTube because we were discussing things that they don't want to hear, of course, obviously. It was very deep going into the impact of the CHEP on all level, not only physical. And also the program is comprehensive. It's not only physical detox or just some crystals. It goes to DNA level of working. It goes to deprogramming, the robotization of the humans, which comes with the vaccine, as Lucia sees it. So I would send you the link so your listeners can go and download the video and listen to it because there is a lot to learn from this video. And there is also a mini healing session at the end. In general, every conversation with Lucia is a healing session because she's healing from her voice already. So it's a bonus for your audience as well. So they can replay this interview just without sound on the background and there will be already a frequency generator of love and light.
So very good.
Additional bonus to your audience. And I'll send you the link to the video so that they can download it and watch it.
That'd be great. And then obviously what the listeners, if they want to contact me, send me an email to contact us at circleofwhitelight.com. It means that if they didn't get the link or they need the link, they can email me and I can pass on the link and the video link to them. Ladies, thank you very much for joining me. Much appreciated for coming on. And just stay with me there for a minute. We're just going to go off to a musical break and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
There you go. That's Lucia Dashkevich, and I had a chat with Lucia. That was a pre-record. Thanks to everybody tuning in. We're a little bit over the time, so I'm not going to carry on much longer. Just to say a big thank you to everybody who's on the chat room chatting away. And Chaga Mushrooms have been mentioned there in the chat room as well. We do have a winner. We had a phone call from James from Drogheda, and James rang in and got the right answer to the question that I put before the actual pre-record with Lucia, which was, who was my co-host? What was the full name of my co-host on Open Your Mind Radio, which was Stephen George, of course. And Stephen's actually logged into the chat room there. Now, thanks to the other people who did phone up, they knew that was Stephen, but they didn't know his last name. So thank you for participating. But I was looking for the full name there. So, but thanks for phoning in. That's much appreciated. Obviously, it proves the phone works as well, which is great. And I might do this again next week. You know, I mean, it's Christmas. And so, you never know. I might do another free T-shirt next week as Christmas is around the corner. So, for myself, anyway, take it easy. I will say the guest on the show,
for next week. By the way, the other chap that won is Ewan Sean. He's on the Cork Limerick border, and I say James Andrade, so them two will be getting the T-shirts during the week. My guest on the show for next week is a chap called Francis Richard Connolly, and we're going to be talking about he has a new book out, but he also has a documentary done, and it's called JFK to 9/11. And I watched the documentary during the week, and it's fascinating. The amount of corruption and control over the years, starting from World War One, was really where he starts, and all everybody being involved from the mafia and everything else. It's just unreal, the depth of the corruption and what was going on. And anybody who tried to make a change or made the difference were obviously taken out. Surprise, surprise. So I'll be looking forward to speaking to Francis next week and having a chat with him. But for myself, thanks to everybody who's on the chat room who tuned into the show. As I say, sorry we're running late there, a few minutes, 10 minutes over. But take care, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on CircleofWhiteLight.com. Focusing on solutions and thinking different.